This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark Rushenkanesan and, I nearly said Wong Shanning, and Noel Lim. It is 7:06 in the morning, Tuesday the 24th of December. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking about bank mergers as well as palm oil. But before that, let's take a look at the markets.
Asian markets idled yesterday as trading volumes weakened ahead of the Christmas holiday break. No surprise there. Hang Seng was up 0.1%. Nikkei was marginally up, just above 0.02%. On the flip side, South Korea's Kospi finished marginally lower, just about 0.02% down. Shanghai Stock Exchange lost 1.4%, its worst single day drop in 6 weeks. And closer to home, Singapore's STI inched up 0.05% and the KLCI rose 0.25%. In the US, stocks rang in another round of closing records as investors focused on reports that China will cut import tariffs for frozen pork, pharmaceuticals and some high-tech components starting 1st January.
And the S&P was up about 0.1%, the Dow grew 0.34% and Nasdaq rose 0.23%. So apart from stocks, some commodities have certainly done well this year. For example, gold hit an all-time high at $1,557 in September.
So today we are going to be taking a more focused look at commodities, specifically at oil and gold. And for that, we have on the line with us Howie Lee, economist with OCBC Bank. Thank you very much for joining us, Howie. So OPEC Plus looks like it will maintain existing supply through 2020. This aside, you know, what are the other things that we should be paying attention to for oil next year?
I think if you look through for most of 2019, the main bugbear for the oil market has been the persistent low demand, especially in China. And I think to that end, a rebound in China's consumption, especially with regards to diesel, I think that will be the biggest indicator that the oil market is back on a healthy appetite, so as to speak. On top of that, I think what we are concerned about is firstly the falling inventories in the US. I think with the decline in production of oil from the Middle East, there's been increasing demand for U.S. shale, and I think that's adding pressure on that side of the world. And finally, of course, not forgetting the increasing amount of tensions that we have seen around the world, especially in the Middle East and Latin America. I think those have the potential to jack up oil prices.
So taking all of that into consideration, what are your expectations for oil prices next year?
I think we are a bit more bullish on that front compared to the market, because I think we are really seeing some pickup in economic activity around the world. We are seeing rebounds in, say, electronic shipments, in even PMIs in China, for example. And I think those are signs that the economy has stabilized following a year of turbulence given the trade war. And going into 2020, I think we should see a continued increase in prices, especially from Q2 onwards when the seasonal demand starts to pick up.
Phase one of the US-China trade deal has been agreed and will be signed in January. How will this agreement factor into oil prices?
Well, I think firstly, I think this time is different in the sense that we don't see any going back on this deal compared to what I've been seeing through 2019. And I think that gives businesses a lot of confidence to go ahead and make decisions. And I think even for investment managers, I think it gives them a solid footing to say, okay, you know, let's take a bit more risk going into 2020. And I think with the rebound in risk appetite, oil prices would generally increase as demand increases. It is a rare occurrence in 2019, and I think it having a hit above $65 might be a sign that we could continue heading higher, possibly to the 68-70 level in 2020.
But what are some other key risks to your outlook for 2020?
Well, of course, the tensions around the world, I think that will always be a wild card that we have no forecast or clue over. But in addition, I think what we cannot forget is that we have a U.S. presidential elections next year. And I think that event has been downplayed by the markets significantly. In anybody's campaigning, there will of course be promises given, and sometimes those promises might come across a little rough on the edges. And I think if President Trump continues his rhetoric of trade war or goes back on his promises, because he's trying to win over his domestic audience, then I think that might pressure oil prices downwards a bit.
So moving away from oil and turning to gold, the precious metals rally looks to have run out of steam. In your opinion, what's dimmed gold's appeal?
Well, yeah, it ended as soon as it started, I guess, somewhat unfortunately. And I think that has been largely due to, firstly, a rebound in U.S. interest rates, which, of course, came on the back of better risk appetite following the thawing of U.S.-China relations in October. I think based on our studies, we are looking at a downward decline of below $1,400 once the interest rates on the 10-year yields of treasury bonds exceed 2%. Right now, we are at about 1.8%, and we are still quite a bit off, about 20 basis points away from that level. But as and when it hits, and I think it will hit if we continue to see progress in the US-China trade deal, then I think the run on gold is more or less over.
So tell us, Howie, will India and China's appetite for gold be able to cushion prices?
Yes and no. I think on the physical end, definitely if we see the US dollar start to depreciate and the RMB and the Indian rupee gains in strength, and on top of our base case assumption in which there's some stabilization of the economy, then we could see some physical buying in terms of jewelry and ornaments at least. However, having said that, we note that gold prices has always been influenced very much by the speculative market, and even in the rare event of a strong growth in the physical demand, I don't think that is going to provide a very strong cushion for gold prices. So yes, demand might improve, but that would not necessarily mean that gold prices will still be supported.
So if that's the case, then what would cause a resurgence in this safe haven asset then?
At this point of time, I think really it largely depends on how the U.S.-China trade talks unfold. And at the risk of repeating myself, I know we've been talking about the U.S.-China trade war for the better part of 18 months, but I think the fact that we are still so fixated on it, I think bears testament to how important this event is. It's a trade war fought between two superpowers of economic might. And any relations that seem to hit south, I think will have a big repercussion on gold prices.
Thank you very much for joining us, Howie. And that was Howie Lee, economist with OCBC Bank, with his thoughts on gold as well as oil prices. And he seems to be of the opinion that particularly going forward, the run on gold might be coming to an end. But in contrast, that oil could be going a little bit higher. So his outlook is between about $68 to $70 in 2020.
So I think he raises some interesting points. And looking at other reports, I think by Goldman Sachs and UBS, they, however, expect that gold prices will rise further to $1,600 per ounce. That is their prediction. And because they really expect still some volatility ahead for the markets, trade talks aren't over yet. But I think the countering point would be Trump wants to win an election. So I think he would want to reach a decent settlement with China as soon as possible.
Yeah, so I think that all comes down to volatility, right? Gold's value has come from the fact that there's been a lot of volatility. It is a safe haven asset. And it doesn't, in terms of its pricing, it doesn't help that central banks have been cutting rates. So the correlation between gold prices and interest rates comes into play as well. I mean, it's just a correlation, it's not causation. But so as things become safer, there's less value for a safe haven asset.
So interesting to watch how gold and oil will continue to perform into 2020. But also looking at some international headlines this morning, Boeing is in the news because it has fired its chief executive, Dennis Muilenburg, in a bid to restore confidence in the firm after two deadly crashes involving its 737 MAX planes. Now, more than 340 people died in the disaster, prompting accusations that Boeing put profit before safety. Now, families of the victims welcomed Mr. Muilenburg's resignation as overdue.
Yes, Boeing has named David Calhoun, who served on the firm's board since 2009 as its current chairman, as the new chief executive and president, but he will only take the position in about a month, somewhere in January. However, the decision to replace Muilenburg with longtime board member has raised questions about its commitment to change, because how are you really changing anything if you're just bringing someone who's been on the board already? Some of the survivors have been quite critical of this, but I think it's a step in. There's been a big part of the issue has been Muhlenberg's communication with everyone following the crashes. He's really impacted the relationship with both the regulators, the suppliers, and not to mention the people who've lost people in those flights.
Yeah, so the appointment of Calhoun perhaps is seen to be like a short-term measure until maybe they'll find a different CEO later on. Calhoun obviously is a known name to them and a known quantity, so I think that was like the obvious safe choice for now. But you know, under Muhlenberg, I think Boeing's share prices actually beat the broader market since 2015 when he came on board as CEO. He was really touted as the guy he created. He made Boeing the most valuable US industrial company, you know, under his reign. You know, he was said to have that Midas touch until the crash in 2015 and also in 20 and shortly after that.
Yeah, I mean, look at the stock price today. If you compare it to the S&P 500, it's still doing much better than the S&P. I think at least double it. But back then, Boeing's price has, I think, now tripled since he first took office. Since he took the post. But the new guy, Mr. Calhoun, he's currently at Blackstone. He's had a little bit of a history with companies in trouble. So I think he's, yes, there are questions around whether you're just, it's the same but different. But he has a history of rescuing companies, or at least putting some stability to that. So maybe that's why he's been put in the top seat.
Indeed. And of course, Boeing had been hoping to have the 737 MAX back in the air by the end of the year. But US regulators have made it clear that that's not going to be happening, that the 737 MAX would not be certified to return to the skies that quickly. So more to come for Boeing. But right now we're heading into a few messages. And then after that, we'll be taking a look at bank mergers and a look back at the year in palm oil. Be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.